Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, chapter 3, text 37. You wrote 336. Okay, I'll do 336. The purport's a lot less. Yeah. Arjuna Uvacha. Athakena prayuktoyam. Papam charati purushah. Anichchanapi varshneya. Dala deva niyojitah. Arjuna uvacha. Athakena prayuktoyam. Papam charati purushah. Anichchanapi varshneya. Bala diva niyojitaha. Arjuna said, O descendant of Vrishni, by what is one impelled to sinful acts, even unwillingly, as if engaged by force? Purport. A living entity, as part and parcel of the Supreme, is originally spiritual, pure, and free from all material contaminations. Therefore, by nature, he is not subject to the sins of the material world. But when he is in contact with the material nature, he acts in many sinful ways without hesitation, and sometimes even against his will. As such, Arjuna's question to Krishna is very sanguine as to the perverted nature of the living entities. Although the living entity sometimes does not want to act in sin, he is still forced to act. Sinful actions are not, however, impelled by the supersoul within, but are due to another cause, as the Lord explains in the next verse. This verse is very important for everyone who wants to be good, who seriously is concerned about being good. Now, not everyone seriously concerned about being good. For most people in the modern age, they're more concerned about making money than being good, or for enjoying themselves. Being good is not on the top of their priorities, if it's anywhere in their priorities or anywhere in their consciousness at all. But for people who want to be good, there arises the question that, well, I try to be good, but it seems sometimes as if I'm forced. Arjuna doesn't say here that someone is forced to be bad, but baladeva iva means it seems almost as if by force one has to do wrong things. In the Christian and Islamic religions, they say this is because of the devil, known as Satan, or in Hindi Urdu, Shaitan. Krishna's answer comes in the next verse. He says it's due to lust and anger. Now that may seem to be almost something like Satan, some external cause, but it's not really external. It's because Karanam guna sangosya sadasadhyoni janmasu. Purusha prakritisto hi bhunte prakriti jangunan. Karanam guna sangosya sadasadhyoni janmasu. The living being who is by nature pure, asango hi ayang purushaha. The same word, asango hi ayang purushaha, means that the soul is by nature not involved with this material modes, but purusha prakritisto hi. When the purusha, the soul, comes in contact with material nature, then he becomes involved with the three modes of nature and thus attains various bodies desirable or karmically elevated species of life and the opposite, very low species of life. So, and again, the word purusha comes in this verse that we're reading now, chapter 3, text 36 of Bhagavad Gita, that the purusha, if he wants to be good, but sometimes it seems that he's forced not to. And Krishna says it's due to karma and krodha. In the next verse, Krishna will say, Shri Bhagavan uvacha kama esha krodha esha rajoguna samudbhavaha mahashano mahapapma vidhyena miha vairinam. Vidhyena miha vairinam. Krishna says, it is lust only, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion and later transformed into wrath, and which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. So it almost seems like karma and krodha are some external forces. But it is because we have associated with the modes of nature, specifically with the mode of passion, rajoguna, that we are in this situation. Even in the Christian tradition, or Islamic tradition, I'm not so familiar with Islamic. I was raised as a Roman Catholic, so I'm not even sure what they say in all the different Christian traditions. But the idea is that Satan can tempt you, but still it's your own choice whether you capitulate or not. You can't blame it all on Satan. You still have a choice. So one has a choice to do good, but sometimes, as Arjuna points out here, we want to be good, but it seems that we are forced to do bad things. And that may happen even against our choice, that we do bad things. Accidentally, for instance, one may not want to cause any harm to any living creatures, but may accidentally step on some insects when walking on the road. Last night, I was sitting and there was a mosquito on my arm. I went to catch it like this to throw it, but in the course of catching it, I didn't catch it, I killed it. I didn't mean to kill. I could have been more careful, maybe, but unfortunately I killed that creature. It may be that we don't want to do wrong things, but it's beyond our control. For instance, this is a somewhat gross example, but it is a common example and it is relevant. It's very, very relevant to the lives of quite a few devotees, especially female devotees. They want to follow all the four regulative principles, but their husband doesn't. And so they're forced to engage in activities against the regulative principles. Of course, they could divorce, but that's also wrong. It's also not good to divorce. They could, or it may be that someone he doesn't want to divorce. I know quite a few cases like this among devotees. They don't want to divorce, but the other spouse gives them literally no choice. There is an exchange between Srila Prabhupada and some of his disciples from a conversation on July the 2nd in 1976, in which a disciple of Srila Prabhupada raises this point. His name is Vipin. I don't know if that's the full name, but it's given here as Vipin. Usually it should be Vipin Bihari, something like that. Anyway, so he says to Srila Prabhupada, nobody wants to do the wrong thing. Nobody wants to go up. And then Srila Prabhupada interjects and says, they are doing wrong things at every moment. So the proposal of Vipin was that nobody wants to do the wrong thing. And Srila Prabhupada says, they are doing the wrong thing at every moment. Now you might think, well, that's a bit extreme to say that, that people are doing wrong things at every moment. But actually, if we're not consciously trying to be Krishna conscious, then we're doing the wrong thing at every moment. Even the people who are trying to be good, because they don't know what it means to be good. Good means in relation to Krishna. Therefore, their so-called being good is of no good to themselves or anyone else. So Vipin responded to Srila Prabhupada's statement, I mean, no one works to do the wrong thing, they work to do the right thing. And Srila Prabhupada said, but they'll not take the right thing. If you say the right thing, they will come to beat you with shoes. Hari Shauri Prabhu, another devotee, interjected, they don't have any idea what the right thing is. Everything they're doing is wrong. And Srila Prabhupada said, they want the right thing, but they have no idea of the right thing. And if you say the right thing, they will not accept it. This is their disease. So in other words, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that people who want to be good, but they're not really sincere about it. They don't want to learn what the ultimate good is. What is the ultimate good? The ultimate good, this is discussed by Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami, that's recorded in Chaitanya Chandraraya Nartaka, and then again in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he speaks of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy as being Amando Daya Daya, which means that different people are trying to be merciful and helpful to others. But in their being helpful, their attempt to be helpful to others, but they help some by causing harm to others. For instance, on the India-Pakistan border or line of control, if an Indian soldier shoots a Pakistani intruder, then by the Indians, he'll be considered a hero. Actually, they don't consider them a hero. They don't. Well, that's it. They should be considered favorably. Let's put it like that. On the Pakistani side, they won't say it's an intruder. They'll say that the Indians, unprovoked. It's always the other side who's wrong. The Indians unprovoked killed one of our innocent citizens. So from the Indian point of view, he did good by killing the Pakistani. And from the Pakistani point of view, he did harm. So you're doing what is perceived as good for the Indians is perceived as bad by the Pakistanis. Someone may be hungry. So pop out to Reddy's chicken shop, buy a chicken and chop its head off, or you can get it done at the shop and feed it to the person. So you fed a hungry person, but you killed the chicken. Chicken's not very happy. Not happy or unhappy, he's dead. How do you come to interview the chicken? What do you feel? He doesn't feel anything. He's dead, gone, and digested. But it's not good to cause harm to others while trying to help another party. But in this world, because it's the world of duality, If you do good for one party, you'll do harm to another. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is the only way by which we can do good to others without doing any harm to anyone. That situates people on the spiritual platform. But then again, many people may say, well, you see, I was just looking after my son as any good parent would do and sending him to college, and then these rascal so-called spiritual people came along and told him to join their funny movement, and now he's not going to college and he's got a shaved head and he doesn't want to get married, and completely all the things we'd been doing all these years for our son completely hijacked it, and they're great, great enemies of human society. So what can you do? Actually, who's becoming a devotee of Krishna or reviving their dormant Krishna consciousness, they're doing the greatest good, even for the family members who may not understand or accept that and who may oppose that. So it's very difficult to act in a way that will be pleasing to everyone. The only way is if we try to satisfy Krishna. Ultimately, everyone will be satisfied. It may take them a little time to appreciate that. Now, there are many, many cases and different scenarios in which people want to be good, but they are apparently forced to do wrong things. A devotee in Sri Lanka told me, this was about 2 years ago, he met a minister of the government and made some suggestions to him. You should do this, this. He said, I'd like to, but we can't. He said, why not? You're in a powerful position in the government. You can. He said, no, we're a small country and we can't go against the big powers. They can't. The governments are in such a situation that they can't go against the big powers. That means careful of this garland. Yesterday, Purna Brahma, is he here? Is he here? He's sitting there at the back. He told me that he saw, or he knows a vegetable seller who's a Sri Vaishnava. And along with his vegetable, just like in every vegetable seller in the Twin Cities, you'll find they also sell eggs. Yesterday we went out for Harinam, and practically every other shop was either a butcher's shop or just an ordinary shop's grocery store, Kirana, and they sell eggs also. Every shop sells eggs or meat. So Purna Brahma told me that he asked, he said, why are you selling eggs? Vaishnavas don't have anything to do with eggs. And he said that if I don't have eggs on sale here, no one will come to buy even vegetables. They buy vegetables and eggs along with it. So what do you do in such a situation? It becomes a very difficult situation for him. He has to support his family by selling vegetables. Many years ago, one devotee told me, I think he must have passed away, he was an old man at the time. He told me, this was in the Abids, Hyderabad temple. He said that he met Srila Prabhupada in Hyderabad. He came to him and said that, you see, I'm doing our family business, which is the toddy business, making toddy. Tardy. In English, toddy. In in your language, tardy. It means alcohol production, illegal alcohol production, legal or illegal, whatever, mostly illegal. So he told Prabhupada this, and he said that after hearing your lecture, I can understand this is wrong. What should I do? Should I stop this business? And he said that Prabhupada thought for a little time, and then he said, well, you have to support your family. He didn't tell him to immediately give it up. There's another instance in Fiji. When Srila Prabhupada went there, there were two brothers who took up Krishna consciousness following Srila Prabhupada. They were from the richest family. They were middle-aged, married, from the biggest business family in Fiji. They had a chain of shops. So they became initiated by Srila Prabhupada, and they asked, or some of the devotees asked, some of Srila Prabhupada's accompanying disciples asked that, you see, they're selling meat in their shop. And then they explained that, yeah, we want to remove the meat, but it's a family business, and we can't independently just stop the meat selling. So Prabhupada said, all right, let it continue for now. But in due course of time, the other family members also understood and they stopped selling meat. But Srila Prabhupada, he didn't tell him to immediately stop. So that was a case of economic pressure, economic necessity, social necessity. If this man had immediately stopped his alcohol business, it would have placed him in a very difficult situation. So Srila Prabhupada, he didn't tell him, but he did gradually, not immediately. He made some other provision and then he gave that up. Srila Prabhupada often said that the devotees, his followers, they should be brahmanas and they should advise the governments. Not that we should take up the government role ourselves, the political power, but we should advise the governments. There's no sign of any governments looking for any direction from us now. But just for instance, if we were asked, what would you advise the government? And probably one of the first things we would want to say is to stop all cow slaughter all over India, isn't it? But apart from the political considerations, is it practical? I'm just putting it, just consider. If tomorrow everyone in India woke up to find out that there's a total ban on cow slaughter, it would probably immediately cause mass riots of Muslims. Here in Hyderabad, for sure, isn't it? For sure. And in the northeastern states, they're mostly all Christians and they allow cow slaughter. And it's very difficult to control because it's all hilly areas and they might just go in revolution and completely secede from the Union of India. So, practically speaking, if you wanted to implement that, just to say no cow slaughter, for a start, it wouldn't work. You wouldn't be able to enforce it. It would be very unpopular in some quarters. So, practically speaking, if we definitely want to stop cow slaughter, but even if we had the political influence to make a law, no cow slaughter anywhere in India, then it would probably be advisable not to do that, but to think of how to actually implement it. As I see it, if cow slaughter is to be stopped in India, which we very much want, in India and everywhere else, you're going to have to convince the Muslims and Christians and the Kerala Hindus. You're going to have to convince them. Because even Manu says that the king has to enforce dharma, but he should not try to enforce something which is very unpopular among the people in general. So the people in general need to be re-educated. And actually, at the time of India's political independence in 1947, it was expected that cow slaughter would be banned. That was one of the main reasons why people supported Gandhi and others. Otherwise, what did they care who's in charge of the country? Most of the people didn't care who was ruling at the top. It didn't affect their life. People were farming their fields, and whether the ruler in Delhi was a Muslim or a British or an Indian, most of them probably never even heard of Delhi. What to speak? They didn't even know who was ruling over the country. They just farmed their land and they went on with their life. But Gandhi made a mass movement, and he made it a religious quest. And it was understood that cow slaughter would be stopped. But then when they got their independence, and it was Gandhi who said that no, you have to allow it because it's part of the Muslim religion. And out of respect for Gandhi, it was allowed, and that presumably is one of the reasons why Nathuram Godse entered history. Those of you who know the history know who Nathuram Godse did and how he entered history. So that's another instance how, even if we want to institute good, it may be very difficult to do so. Srila Prabhupada, in preaching Krishna consciousness in the Western countries, he didn't introduce immediately everything, all the different rules and regulations. He saw that the hippies, who are the main people who are interested in taking up Krishna consciousness, they were very much prone to, or as part of their way of life, that young men and women mixed up freely. So Srila Prabhupada didn't try to make a society among them that was as socially strict in this matter as in India. He did not condone illicit sex, but he got them married, the young men and women married. But they would mix up a lot for it. In the early kirtans, the men and women would all be dancing together. And Srila Prabhupada didn't stop that in the which leads some, I shouldn't say it, but shall I say, well, it might appear as some people are rather dull-witted in saying that, you see, in the beginning Prabhupada allowed men and women to, so that means that's what he really wanted. Yeah, no. Later he spoke so much about Vedic culture, about non-mixing of males and females, that he allowed it in the beginning was a concession to the foolishness and degradation of the Western culture. Not that Srila Prabhupada wanted that, because it's non-conducive for spiritual advancement. Some other examples of doing wrong under social pressure or for various reasons. A young unmarried girl gets pregnant, goes for an abortion. Very common in India today. She may not even think that it's wrong. It's become so normal in India today. One reason you may do wrong is you don't even know it's wrong. She should have known that it was wrong to have illicit sex in the first place. But nowadays it's not even considered to be, less and less it's considered to be wrong. So if you don't know it's wrong, then you may say, well, if you don't know it's wrong, it's not wrong. But it is the duty of everyone to know what is right and what is wrong. As Srila Prabhupada often gave the example that you can drive on the wrong side of the road, and when the police catch you or when you get in a smash, you could say, well, I didn't know. But that's no ignorance of the law is no excuse. Another example Srila Prabhupada often gave is that if a child puts his hand in the fire still burns. The fire doesn't think, oh, it's a child, he doesn't know. The fire still burns. So it is one's duty to understand what is right. Tasmat chastram pramanam te karya karya ajanataha. What is the next line? Gyat va shastra vidhano tam karyam karma iharhasi. One should know, it is one's duty to know what is correct action and what is not correct action. According to scripture, and to act accordingly. In the human form of life, one has the duty to understand what is right and what is wrong and to act accordingly. Ignorance is no excuse. But if one does know and still acts wrongly, then he's more to be blamed. That's why we find in the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, it's stated that if a brahmana drinks alcohol, he's more punished than a shudra. For shudras, it hardly even counts as sinful, because they're of low consciousness. But a brahmana should know better. So one who is a brahmana, he has the solemn duty to act in the most exemplary manner, to set an example for others. Brahmana is supposed to be respected. But not respected just because he has a string on his shoulder, but because of his ideal character. Not even so much for his... Of course, if a brahmana is very learned in Shastra, he may be respected. That's also respected. But however learned one is in Shastra, if he doesn't properly behave, if a brahmana engages in illicit sex or drinking alcohol, then reject it. If a brahmana may be very good in so many ways, for so many years, but if he once is found drinking alcohol, he's just completely rejected. If he's once engaged in sinful activities, like Ajamil, he engaged in illicit sex. So he had to be rejected from Brahmana society. There was no sin, rather that was very honorable that he was engaging in sex with his wife. That is a pious activity to produce children. By the religious function of garbhadhan sanskar, dharma viruddho bhutos mi kamosmi, dharma viruddho bhuto, what is it, kamosmi bar, dharma viruddho bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshaba. Krishna says, I am that sexual act which is not against religious principles. So that's not only not bad, it's
dharmic,
it's religious. But illicit sex, or to engage in sex life using contraception, is sinful, or to abortion is sinful. One may do wrong under out of sentiment. One becomes attached to a person, obliged to them, and so when that person does something wrong, then you feel you have to support them. That's a very difficult thing. If you have a friend or someone you respect and they do something wrong and they come into conflict with others, so you have two conflicting principles here. One is fidelity to the truth and to religion, in which case you should reject. You should not support a person who's doing something wrong. But you have another principle, which is loyalty. So these two principles may come into conflict. That was there in the Kurukshetra battle. Bhishma and Drona, they knew that Duryodhana was wrong, but they still supported him because they felt indebted to him, that he had maintained them for so many years. Also, one of the brothers of Duryodhana, he was the only one who spoke out when Draupadi was being so severely mistreated. It wasn't Bhishma, didn't say anything. The Pandavas themselves were restrained by Yudhishthira. Otherwise, Bhima would have killed Duryodhana and Dushasana right on the spot. But it was Vikarna, one of the brothers of Duryodhana, was the only one who stood up and said, "This is wrong." Bhishma, at that point, he made a vow to kill all the sons of Dhritarashtra. So Vikarna was one of them. Vikarna, he had to fight on the side of Duryodhana. He did. He was killed by Bhima. When Bhima killed him, he did parikrama of his dead body out of respect. So Vikarna, he was on the wrong side. He knew it was wrong, but still he obligated by familial duty. He fought on the wrong side. One may do the wrong thing out of fear. Just in Sri Rangam, one of my disciples told me that her father in North India had been murdered about 10 years ago because he stood up to corruption. Yeah, corruption is a known word in Telugu, huh? You can say it in Telugu. Everyone knows, huh? They can understand. It's one of those common words that gets used so many times that everyone can understand what it means. So it may be that someone goes along with corruption, not that they agree with it or that they want to, but if they stand up to it, they could be killed. In Bangladesh, many years ago, one devotee who was a policeman told me, or rather he asked me, "What should I do? If I don't take bribes, I'll get in very bad trouble with the police officers and everyone else in the police force." if I don't take bribes, because everyone's taking bribes, and if you don't take, they become afraid of you. Who is this? He's going to upset our system. He's not going along with our system. So he asked me what to do. Should I take or not take? So what do I say in such a circumstance? Huh? What do you think? I told him, you take, don't extort excessively from people. You take, you do what you have to do in the circumstance. Give the money to Krishna. The police all over India, they take money, and what do? They drink it away, mostly. And then they beat up prisoners and this and that. It's not a nice profession. So you might, out of fear, do the wrong thing. There are so many reasons why one can do a wrong thing. Someone who stands up and does the right thing can be a very brave person. Where everyone is very bad, to do the right thing can be very brave. Vikarna stood up, and what Bhishma didn't dare to say, what Vidura didn't dare to say, and what Duryodhana and Dushasana and Shakuni, they certainly wouldn't approve. He stood up and said, this is a dharma. It's obvious. Everyone can understand. It's taking place in the presence of the king, Dhritarashtra, who's supposed to be upholding dharma. It was very brave of him to say that. Who will stand up and say? We may like to think, if I was there, I would say something. But would we? The whole atmosphere is surcharged with adharma, and no one wants to speak. Duryodhana, practically he's the king, and he's ruthless. Are you going to stand up in front of him and tell him that you're a rascal? Who will dare to do that? On a less dramatic scale, it may be among our own devotees also. Sometimes I hear things like this, that the devotees, because I insist on this, they come to this kind of program dressed in clothing that is suitable for a Vaishnava, but then when they're outside, the ladies themselves, they may dress in tight clothing, which is very unsuitable for a Vaishnava, or have their daughters do so. So Guru Maharaj can't see us. Krishna sees everything. You can cheat me, you can't cheat Krishna. They may think that, well, if my daughter doesn't dress in tight clothes, then I don't know what they think. Then the other demons won't like her. Well, that's good not to be. I mean, the young girls, they're not demons, but they're under the influence of demoniac society. You just stand up for your principles. Stand up for your principles. I'm not going to dress like that. The Muslims, they do, right? They don't. They're not going to send their daughters out in tight clothing. Why can't you? You have to. You don't have enough strength of mind. They never understood what Krishna consciousness is all about. We have to decide. Why is it that we are forced to do wrong things? Well, we're not really forced. Balad eva neojita. It seems as if we're forced, but we can decide. We can get strength from sadhana, from associating with sincere devotees, strong devotees. We have to decide what we want to be. Do we want to be a pure devotee of Krishna? Really? Or do we want it cheaply? that I'll enjoy all the facilities of this demoniac society, and at the same time I'll be a pure devotee. It's not going to happen. It doesn't work. You can't be a demon and a devotee. We have to decide. Yeah, here comes the representative of the demoniac society. What's this? Some advertisement for some cinema show, probably, is it? Who knows? A cinema advertisement, maybe, or political advertisement, or who knows what it is. Whatever it is, it's not Krishna conscious. Now, something else related to this. In Varnashram Dharma, the spiritual and the material overlap. The Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudras, Brahmacharis, Grihastha, Vanaprasthas, and Sannyasis. These eight divisions within society have nothing to do with anything spiritual directly. But Swakaramana Tamabhyacha Siddhing Vindati Manavaha Sve Sve Karmanya Bhirata Sangsitim Labhate Naraha. By acting within one's role within society and serving Krishna, everyone can achieve perfection. So the material role and the spiritual role, they overlap in a society that is centered on serving Krishna. Now, we don't have anything resembling Varnashram society in the cities, but we do have devotees and they have material needs also. So it may be that when there are many devotees in one community, sometimes we see among the devotees in a city that devotees, they take some role, some more capable devotees take a role in assisting other devotees, not only spiritually, but also socially. They may help to arrange to get their children married. They may help to arrange them to get a job. So in this way, they give spiritual guidance and material help both. And the two may overlap, which is why we have to very minutely understand what is directly spiritual and what can be spiritualized. Now, I've said this many times, I'll say it again, because there is propaganda in our society that it's said to young boys going to college that your studies are your devotional service, and then later when they get a job, your career is your devotional service. It can be. If someone is specifically appointed to serve Krishna in a specific way and they're doing it with a total sense of detachment, that I'm trying to advance my career so that I can use that position to promote Krishna consciousness. It can be devotional service, although it's not inherently Krishna conscious. And the desire to have a successful career is basically a material desire that materialistic people have. So if one has not overcome the materialistic aspirations that I will be praised by others, I will be respected for others, I will earn lots of money by having a so-called successful career, if without clearly delineating that this is all nonsense, if one simply says that your career is your devotional service, then that is misleading. And it also may lead to, because to be successful in a career, you have to work hard, you have to put long hours into it, which means it will minimize the activities which are directly devotional service, hearing and chanting about Krishna, prominent in that. So in fact, by saying that this is your devotional service, but by making people think that it is on the level of hearing and chanting, it's actually doing a violence to them. If instead it was said, well, you just get some job in which you don't have to endeavor so much, only have more time for hearing and chanting, which is conducive for advancement in Krishna consciousness. But if instead we say that working hard, yes, you have to work hard and study more so that you can get a better job, and anyway, you won't have so much time for attending Shravan Kirtan camps and chanting your rounds, but anyway, it's all the same. But it's not the same. So that is misleading. It may also be that a devotee is helped, or someone in the role of a spiritual leader helps others, and they become as if obliged to him and performs devotional activities. But then if he does something wrong, we don't recognize, or we may recognize and bit out of sentiment think that, oh, it's okay. It's not wrong because he does it. Or even if it's wrong, I won't see that it's wrong. It's not that if someone does many things right, he has a license to do something wrong. But one's vision may be clouded by some kind of sentimental attachment. Therefore, it is required that we discuss and understand these topics thoroughly. As you may have noticed, I don't give generally very what might be called nice or entertaining classes, or even talk a lot about Krishna Leela. But I see devotees who do like to hear that kind of thing, but generally speaking, we don't see, hand on the mouth, another, tell him, sitting right to your right, Gopa Gopinath, wiping his hand with his mouth. Yeah, please go wash your hand. Were you here this morning for the class? Explain to him. I've explained it so many times. Don't put your hand on your mouth. Okay. So they may like to hear such things, and it's nice that they like to hear such things. But then they don't have the knowledge, jnana sina, the sword of knowledge, by which they can distinguish between what is favorable for their advancement and what isn't, and therefore they fail to make good progress in Krishna consciousness. They don't even have any idea that there's any, that they really have to strive to overcome their anarthas. They don't even know the difference between anartha and artha, what is not wanted and what is obstructive to our devotional service and what is. So for this reason, I continue to speak in this manner, for my own requirement also. I also need to remind myself what is right, what is wrong. In this extract from the conversation that I quoted, Srila Prabhupada, he didn't accept, actually, the proposition that many people want to do the right thing. He didn't accept it. He said, but if you tell them the right thing, they won't take it. If they really wanted the right thing, and you tell them what is the right thing, they won't take it. Srila Prabhupada said, they want the right thing, but they have no idea of the right thing. And if you say the right thing, they will not accept it. Which means they're not really very sincere. People like to make a show of being good, but actually, are they really good? If they're really good, they have to take to Krishna consciousness seriously. So please read Srila Prabhupada's books, listen to his lectures. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, he recommended, or he stressed more reading his books than listening to his lectures. But so both should go on side by side. And by listening to his lectures and his conversations, so many points arise which help us to understand. That's another thing wrong. Don't turn off the phone. And it said, how many times have I said? It must be 1,000 times now. Switch off your phone. Signs are everywhere, but they won't switch off their phone. What can you do? There's a saying in Sanskrit, and I know it in Bengali, Srila Prabhupada used to say. You probably have it in other languages also. Koila dhuleyo moila jabena. Means even if you wash coal, it won't become clean. Do you say that in Telugu? Yeah. So, what to do? Still I have to go on saying. So I need to be purified myself also. Hare Krishna. We have to decide. Do we really want to be good? Do we really want to surrender to Krishna? Are we really prepared to do what is required? Or do we just want to make a show of being good? It's a very heavy thing. To make a show is much easier. To actually do it, that requires utmost commitment and sincerity. It's not a very difficult thing to do. What do you do if you want to be Krishna conscious? Rise early in the morning, chant minimum 16 rounds every day. Apply oneself to the hearing and chanting process. Pray to Krishna. Read Srila Prabhupada's books. The process is not difficult. We have to decide if we actually want to take it up. Hare Krishna. Any question, please? He put his phone off this time. Huh? He didn't bring it at all. Oh, he wasn't here. Okay. Can tell him to chant Hare Krishna 16 rounds every day and follow the principles. Will he do it? Could do, you never know. Why not? Any question? No, no questions. Okay, so I have a question. You going to go on Harinam now? Gonna go. Okay. Jai. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.